Hey, it's time for VoiceOver Body Shop. And tonight our guest is Byron Wagner. Wave.
In 3D.
In 3D. We're going to talk about all sorts of the millions of cool things that he does. Right? Okay, good.
This is a 7-part show.
It will be. And then, of course, we have some tech talk later. If you've got questions for Byron, which you will be fascinated by, and you'll have, like, all these questions, throw them in the chat room, which is only on Facebook tonight. So if you're in our homepage and you're like, where's the chat room? Go over to Facebook. You'll find us there, and you can put all your comments in Facebook, and that will get your questions on this very show.
But throw them gently, please.
It depends.
Okay.
Are we ready, Mr. Whittem?
We're ready. Let's make it happen.
All right. It's time for VoiceOver Body Shop right now.
From the outer reaches, they came, bearing the knowledge of what it takes to properly record your voiceover audio. And together, from the center of the VO universe, they bring it to you now. George Whittem, the engineer to the VO stars, a Virginia Tech grad with the skills to build, set up, and maintain the professional VO studios of the biggest names in VO today. And you, Dan Leonard, the VoiceOver Home Studio Master, a professional voice talent with the knowledge and experience to help you create a professional sounding home VO studio. And each week, they allow you into their world, bringing you talks with the biggest names in the VoiceOver world today, letting you ask your questions and giving you the latest information to make the most of your VoiceOver business. Welcome to VoiceOver Body Shop.
VoiceOver Body Shop is brought to you by VoiceOverEssentials.com, home of Harlan Hogan signature products, Source Elements, remote studio connections for everyone, VoiceActorWebsites.com, where your VO website isn't a pain in the butt, VOHeroes.com, become a hero to your clients with award-winning voiceover training, J. Michael Collins Demos, when quality matters, and VoiceOver Extra, your daily resource for VO success.
And now, live to drive from their super secret clubhouse and studio in Sherman Oaks, California, here are the guys.
Well, good evening, depending on where you are. I'm Dan Leonard.
And I'm George Whittem.
And this is VoiceOver
Body Shop,
or VO BS.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Very well-trained crowd tonight.
Down boy. Okay. Yeah, we've got Byron Wagner with us tonight, and people are like saying, who's Byron Wagner? Maybe a name they're not familiar with, but if they knew all the stuff that he's responsible for.
He's the man behind the curtain, ladies and gentlemen.
Absolutely. Literally behind the curtain. And we're going to learn about all the stuff that he does on, you know, in voiceover and technology. And you're going to have lots of questions for him because he's going to be talking about stuff that you're going to be fascinated
by. The longer he talks, the more questions you'll have.
That's right. And the less we'll have
to
say.
Trust me.
So why don't we bring him on?
We should do that.
We should.
Cut to the chase.
Yes, it is now time to bring in His High Majesty Lord and Master of all that is digital, Byron Wagner.
Hey. Thank you.
That's his back. That's his front.
He's going to come in very gracious and gracefully.
Hey, it's good to have you back. And your front's not too bad either.
Thank you. Anyway.
Rump him.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Good to have you here finally.
You're not George.
No.
You're Dan.
That's George.
Oh, got it. Okay, thank you.
How do you do?
Thank you, Dan.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, welcome to the show. Now, people probably would like to know more about you because you're responsible for everybody's life right now. From what I read in your bio, my head was spattered all over my living room floor as I'm going.
We're not going to be reading it tonight.
And you didn't sell tickets.
I did not.
Oh.
Well, there's people watching.
Okay.
Where can they find your bio, actually, so they can read it on
their own? It's actually hidden, but if you do a search for my name with the minus sign and Cinderella, you will find it.
Okay, good.
And the reason you have to use the minus sign is because about 4 years ago, with no prompting from me, they invented a new anime character in Midnight Cinderella named Byron Wagner.
Who knew? Get out of here.
Who knew?
No, yeah, there were lots of pictures of Byron Wagner when I searched for that.
Yeah.
But then I found this long scroll of a bio.
If they search my name, they'll find VS.
Yes. Yes.
The cruel and unusual punishment, the wonder of me, yeah. Spiel.
I mean, I thought I knew a lot about you, but then you were there when it all happened.
And well, you, that's
you're responsible.
It, some of that has the added benefit of being true.
Okay.
The bio.
Okay.
Yes.
Good.
Some of it.
All right. So why don't we start with the basics then? You're from Omaha, Nebraska, originally.
Where the men are men and the sheep are nervous. Yes.
That's, yes. Okay. Outstanding. Tell us a little bit about yourself. And
I never did anything professionally.
Nothing?
Until I was 8.
Okay.
I got a very late start. I started doing magic and ventriloquism for children's birthday parties. And I charged 25 cents and all the ice cream and cake I could eat. And unfortunately, my priorities have not changed since then.
Okay.
And from doing magic and ventriloquism, I got into doing theater. And from theater, I always loved technology. And when I was a very little kid, my dad had a reel-to-reel mono tape recorder. And I will never forget, the first tape recording of me that I'm aware of was when we watched the second live performance of Mary Martin as Peter Pan.
Peter Pan, yeah.
On TV. And I loved
flying.
It. And they played the tape back, and I could sing the songs along with the TV. And he interviewed me, and I actually have an interview of me at age 5 or 6 on a tape recorder. And so I thought technology was really cool. I love tape recorders. And so when I had the chance in high school, I joined a junior achievement project.
Ah.
And instead of whittling coat hangers out of wood and selling stock in the company and then selling the product and so on, I hooked up with the company that was based out of KFAB, a radio station, 50,000 watt clear channel in Omaha. And it was awesome because they had Sony C37A microphones and real Ampex tape recorders. And I could bring friends and cousins in late at night when nobody was there except the big 16-inch reels of automation flowing through the machines. And I could record stuff.
Yeah.
Not that I would ever do that. But that was a long time ago. The right. statute of limitations has long run out. And it was cool.
You're
and I love that
stuff. Not
getting
fired anymore?
Shh. I'm already fired. So, so that was just amazing. And I really enjoyed it. And that kind of set the tone. So the next year, when I was a senior in high school, everybody else had a car. I had a Robert 778X Crossfield Heads tape recorder, reel to reel, that could take 10.5-inch reels, had an 8-track recorder in the side,
ooh,
and cost as much as a car.
Like you said, everybody else had a car.
That's right. I took
sounds
the bus.
Sounds like a line from the movie Ferris Bueller's Day Off. You got a car.
It was not a Ferrari.
I got a computer.
That's
how's
right.
How's that for being born on
yeah.
Earth?
No, that's... Yeah. So
you would just go around recording stuff places?
I didn't have a mic.
Oh.
I had a
recorder.
Did you have any friends with a mic by chance?
Funny you mention that. They had some PAs, rock bands, and so on. So I had a very motley assortment of microphones.
Yeah.
And then I needed a console of some kind, and that, no way in heck. So I got some Midland, as in Taiwanese knockoffs, or Japanese knockoffs, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Of a Shure M68 mono mixer, you know, like 4 microphones that actually
has the
could 4
blue knobs.
That's right. And if you make 2 of them, and one of them goes in the left channel and the other one goes in the right channel, you can do some stuff, and you can even have another one for a center so you can split it between the 2 and have mono in the center channel.
Yeah.
And so when I went to school, to college, everybody else had a steamer trunk full of, you know, linens and clothes and so on. I had 2 steamer trunks full of my Robert 770X. No, I didn't take it. I brought 12 pairs of underwear. 12 was a lot. January, February, March. No, it's an old joke. And I had 2 steamer trunks, 2 guitar cases, a 6-string and a 12-string, and a duffel bag. And the duffel bag had the blankets and the sheets and some underwear and some clothes.
Everything
and that was the way I went back
gear.
And forth.
Yeah, I had my dad's old Navy sheet metal collapsible like trunk at Virginia Tech. I put wheels on it and brought all my gear in with that.
That was both fancy and schmancy.
It was huge and heavy. It was the wrong time to find out that they only had a freight elevator we weren't allowed to use.
Look, it's Halley's Comet.
Sorry, anyway.
So
my stuff.
Yeah, but that was skipping ahead. I'll skip back a little bit to make the long story longer. My senior year in high school, I hooked up with the Junior Achievement Company that was doing television programs.
Ooh.
So I got to produce and direct a series of hour-long color specials that were played on Sunday midday on a commercial television station, KMTV. And so, you know, you got to rotate around. I sold ads. I was the director. I was the producer. And when it was my turn to direct my episode specifically, I got film footage. I did some social engineering with United on the phone. I got some 16 millimeter footage so I could have some moving visuals to the local folk group doing Leaving on a Jet Plane.
Right, right.
And could invert the colors and make it negative and very trippy and very psychedelic and all that stuff. And on the basis of that 2-inch high band quad tape of the shows that I had done, I got a talent grant to Ohio University, which is like getting a football scholarship because I had terrible grades.
Yeah.
But I had great SATs and I had product.
And you apparently were a good grant writer.
Well, I was desperate. It was the only school I was accepted to. So, you know, I needed to get in. And they said, don't worry about it. I said, really? They said, yeah, no, if we want you here, you'll go to school here. I didn't argue with them. Although I must tell you, I don't have to, but the other school that I was invited to attend was a place called Stevens College outside of St. Louis. And it was, I knew it was a mistake because it was a girls' school. In fact, the reputation was, and still pretty much is, it was the girls' school where each of the girls that went there boarded two horses.
Really?
Do you get the picture?
It's one of those schools.
It was one of those schools. I've never been there. They invited me to come down. And one of the attendees' father was the guy who was running NBC. And they had decided they wanted to get into media. They knew about the stuff that I had done. So of the first two times that they called, and it was a mistake, I didn't call them back. It was a girls' school. And they said, no, no, no. We're bringing in, I think it was like five guys. Sue's laughing because she gets it. Okay. Let's think the odds. About 600 undergrad girls, each with two horses, and five guys, and they want to give me a scholarship to go there? I thought about that long and hard, and then I thought, okay, now, if I go to Ohio University, I will be learning from the best and so on, and if I go to this other school, I will greatly enjoy sharing what wisdom I have, but I don't know that I'll really learn that much.
Yeah.
So I made one of the worst decisions of my life. No, I went to OU.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, and so when I got there, it turns out they were the only school. They had built an $8 million, seven-story radio TV complex.
Really?
And everything else. If you wanted to get into radio TV when I was going to school, you went to J school, like at Northwestern or maybe NYU. And that was about it.
This is Ohio U and Athens.
OU and Athens, not O State. So the difference was 45,000 undergrad versus 17.
Okay.
So so I got there. I was very jazzed. And then I realized, no, if you want to get your degree relating to broadcast, you got to basically go to J school. So I took the first series of courses and learned about Asahi Shimbun and all these foreign newspapers and things. And I was a little impatient and I didn't want to learn about all that stuff. So I changed my major to motion picture production and I learned about film and I did film sound and that kind of stuff. And I ended up building or helping build a multi-track 16-track recording studio in Chillicothe, Ohio, in what used to be a general store, which during Prohibition had been a speakeasy in the basement, and they still had slot machines in the basement. They were all dusty. They weren't being used anymore.
Right.
And actually, that place still exists and turned into what's now a school for recording engineers. I mean, the founder, unfortunately, a guy named Joe Waters, passed away about 3 or 4 years ago. But he and his brother, who was a carpenter, had gone around and it was a little bit of a cargo cult kind of thing. They visited all these great recording studios in Ohio and nearby. And they came back and they converted what had been a general store, if I remember correctly, into a studio. Except it sounded terrible and I didn't understand why. And I went to visit it because I had a project I needed to do, a multi-track recording with a band. And
so you had to figure out why.
Yeah.
Well, what I noticed was they had these huge doors that were padded on the both sides and really thick and everything, but you could open them with one finger. And I said, why do you have like an inch and a half airspace gap around these big doors? And they said, well, the other places had like weather stripping and stuff, but they were too hard to open. I said, oh,
I understand.
Yeah. I said, oh, this could be a reason that you're getting 100 cycle feedback every time you turn the control room monitors up past 1.5. What if we fix that? And they said, do you know how to do that? And I said, well, let's do a barter deal because I needed to record an album. And so that was kind of how I started getting into recording studio design. And I, you know, and it goes on there.
You learn by doing.
Yes.
That's not unlike what I do.
That's a lot of
like a degree in there somewhere, but yeah. Man, you learn
don't
most
force
of it,
it use a bigger hammer. That's the answer.
Yeah. Yeah. If they ask, do you know how to do this? Well, yes. Yes, I do.
And actually, there's another story that you might appreciate or not. When I was at Ohio University and I was at the film facility, I noticed that their audio was basically non-existent. They had a Nagra.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They had a 3 out of 4 and they had a resolver so that you could move the stuff off the quarter inch tape to the 16 millimeter mag stock. But they didn't really have a mixing desk. They didn't have all this stuff.
Right.
And so I thought, oh, okay. What? And they didn't have a budget. They had, you know, they had some Moviolas. They even had a flatbed Steenbeck, which is very state of the art.
Hmm.
And I found out about this program that they had whereby government surplus was available to state institutions.
Still is.
Basically for free. You got like a budget and a credit card kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, oh, yeah, there's this. It was like Aladdin's Cave of Wonders. There's this warehouse in Columbus, and it has all this stuff. You want a Jeep.
Like at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Yes. Yeah. Except it wasn't in boxes. It was all like out and so on. So I said, could I go look and see what they had? And they had all of this stuff. And it was mil spec, so it was like huge and hammer tone gray and so on. But so I brought back all this stuff and we had a much more usable facility. And so they let me do that.
That's so great.
If you're wondering, we're talking with Byron Wagner about some of the cool stuff that he's done. And but let's move ahead in time here. Now, what year is all that going on? When were you in college? Was it early 70s?
1970. Well, I graduated high school in 69. So okay. I was in college in 69 and 70. And then I left.
Wow. Okay.
I'm a dropout.
It doesn't seem to have affected your lifestyle.
Much at all.
Okay,
no.
Okay, good. No. If you've got a question for Byron, throw it in the Facebook
gently,
chat room.
Please.
No, you can lob it, you know, or you can do a fastball or a curveball, but, you know, because you love being thrown a curveball.
I do.
And I'm sure there'll be a few out there. Throw it in there, and we'll be happy please. To ask Byron that question. But you're going to have more questions after we get into this next one. So how did you get into voiceover, and when did that start? Because you also were acting, too.
Well, funny you should ask.
It wasn't funny at all. It was deliberate.
I did my first voiceover when I was about 9 or 10. They needed a magician for the hands for a Frito-Lay commercial because, you know, they used to put toys and stuff in.
Right. Yeah.
They had this magic trick of a mouse that you could make to seem to run over your hands
because
there was a thread.
I remember that. Magic
right.
Mouse. Or
that's they, right.
Yeah, yeah.
So they needed a magician and they wanted a kid. And I happened to be both of those simultaneously and at the same time. So I did that thing. And then I found out that you could do, and I was in junior theater and I was in, and actually Omaha was a great theater town. Omaha, the Omaha Playhouse. Okay, here comes the list.
So were you developing your patter at 11 already?
No, that was at 8. On my recent trip to the Orange, I found an ancient and mystical one.
Yes.
Which would cause things to appear and disappear. Well, no, okay, this is a benefit potentially to voiceover actors. There was one book in the Omaha Public Library branch that was closest to us, which I believe was the Benson branch, that had anything about ventriloquism. And I loved particularly the recently late Paul Winchell. Paul Winchell, Jerry Mahoney, Knucklehead Smith. I was also a fan of Danny O'Day, you know, and Farfel, chocolate. But I loved Paul Winchell, and I love ventriloquism, the idea of entertaining people, and I was the oldest of 3 children, so my peers were kind of adults, so if you could do something that could catch an adult's attention, much less get praise from an adult,
that was
the ticket.
Yeah.
And my father would travel occasionally, and he would bring back things like felt baseball pennants from where he'd been, Sholo, Arizona, with the hand of cards and stuff. And he went to Chicago, went to Marshall Fields, and he brought me back 2 magic tricks. One was the classic red egg bag, which not surprisingly would cause eggs to appear and disappear. And the other one was the penultimate finger chopper. And I learned how to do those, and I would go to people and say, want to see me chop my finger? Want to see me make an egg appear?
Yeah.
People would say no, and I wouldn't listen, and I would show them, and they go, how'd you do that? I go, oh, it's a secret. So people, particularly adults, liked me mm-hmm. when I did magic. And I loved ventriloquism. So my mom took me to the library and I found this one book. I have to find it some sooner or later someday. And it had a section on magic and a section on ventriloquism. And at the beginning of the section on magic was a quote from, I think they ascribe the quote to Orson Welles, but possibly from Houdini or maybe even Robert Houdin, who I think the quote actually originates from. And it's very simple. It says, a magician is merely an actor playing the part of the magician. Mm. And it sounds simple, but the funny thing was, is I was eight. Right. How do you pull off the Mystic East Patterns stuff when you're eight?
Right.
A little cognitive dissonance there. So I didn't know how to be a magician. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to do the tricks. And then once I read that, I was like, oh, I can do that. Right.
Right. Yeah.
And once I gave myself permission, it was easy.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that a billion years later and a year, you know, in a Meisner workshop, I finally was able to get to the same point in terms of acting. But so I ended up, to your question, 10 hours ago.
A lot harder
when
you're an adult, isn't it?
It's
a lot harder to do, to give yourself permission.
I'm not an adult.
You have a big advantage.
So that's how I got into doing magic and ventriloquism. And so the way I got into voiceover was, I love to read. I learned to spell my first word. My parents' names were Bob and Sylvia. My mom is 94. Just saw her over the weekend.
Oh, wow.
And they would say, my mother would say to my father, Bob, put away the C-A-N-D-Y. It was like, took me about a day to figure out what that spelled. So I learned how to read a little bit before I went into kindergarten and so on. So I loved reading and I loved performing and so on. So I did a little bit of voiceover when I was like 9 or 10 for, you know, some local ads. And then when I was in radio, man, my summer job, having had the experience at KFAB through the Junior Achievement Program,
mm-hmm.
I got my FCC ticket. I got a third class with a broadcast endorsement so that I could take transmitter readings so that I could be left alone. Big mistake. With the transmitter in the controls and the remote stuff.
How old were you then?
15.
Oh, okay. You're precocious.
Wah, wah, wah. Yeah. And so I got a board shift as a summer job. I had two summer jobs. I worked at something machinery and supply. And we delivered things like fire hydrants and gate valves. And on the weekends, I had a job working at KBON, which was an all talk station. It was in a high rise. And all I had to really do were cue tapes and play them. And then discover they had a monitor speaker in the bathroom. Sometimes the tapes would end short, like a lot shorter.
Of course.
Like 5 minutes into what was supposed to be a half-hour program, and I run down the toilet paper. Yes, trailing. You got the visual. Grab a cart with a PSA, shove it in the deck, hit play, turn the fader up, and figure, what am I going to do for 15 more minutes? And the answer was, let's play some music on an all-talk station.
Right.
And that's what I did. So that was, and, you know, it was everything short of the old joke about, and I would rip and read wire copy. You know, they had teletypes.
Of course.
And we had AP and UPI and the local stuff and so on, and I would deliver the newscasts. So that was actually my first really legit actually getting paid voiceover.
To talk.
Yeah.
Rip and read is not easy.
Oh, no.
Because you're like looking at these stories, you know, the Titanic has just sunk. Just as an example.
Boys and girls, you'll never guess what happened.
Yeah. And you've got to like do it in a new style after not you, because you always have to pre-read.
And you don't know what, if you can, you don't even know what the end of the story is before you start reading
the
beginning.
That's right. And it's like you could say something like, and only 20 people were killed. Jeez.
Right.
I think I did that once or twice.
Yeah.
You want, I have a great joke that I can't not tell.
Okay.
This elderly,
that's why you're here.
This elderly woman, doorbell rings. And by the way, I have a collection of obsolete jokes that they will not make any sense to anyone soon, and this is kind of one of them that's aging almost.
Does it
past
involve dialing a phone by chance?
No, but close. Okay, so the doorbell rings and the woman hobbles to the door. Yes, goes Western Union, ma'am. I have a telegram. She goes, oh, I've always wanted a singing telegram. He goes, well, ma'am, this is not a singing. Oh, please, my whole life I've wanted, can't you He goes, well, ma'am, it's not, they didn't pay for a singing telegram, and it's, I'm a tear. She goes, come on, please, for once, just do me a favor. Sing me the telegram. I goes, okay. Da-da-da-da-da-da, your sister Rose is dead.
I've heard that joke. I saw that coming out of left field.
Oh, man.
So, voiceover.
Yes.
Yes.
So you got into voiceover.
I got into voiceover.
And when did it bring you?
I got the hell out of it, too.
Yeah. But you're back in it now.
Apparently so.
Yeah. What brought you out here to sunny California?
Well, I was...
fast forward a few years.
Yeah, that's good. Remember the part about me escorting people into the radio stations and making musical recordings?
Of course.
So I started hanging out at the local multi-track studios.
Just hanging out and just walking.
Well,
the
they
door
would let me, you know, they would, I would introduce myself, and I didn't, was not packing heat at the time. That was my second plan. And they had one of them, Sears Recorders, had an 8-track Scully with cell sync. You could overdub. It was awesome. They even had an EMT 100 metal plate reverb chamber that sounded like you were in heaven.
Yeah.
Especially if you crank the sucker up.
Yeah, those things are awesome.
Unbelievable. So it was the professional recording studio in town. And there was another place, UPC, Universal Promotions, that had a 4-track Ampex. And let's just say that there is now a technique which is referred to as I mentioned earlier, social engineering. I learned the power of my voice. I learned that I could call Minnesota Mining and Manufacturing on the phone, who had a brand new 16-track recorder.
Yep.
And they were late to the party because Ampex was there and Scully was there, and 3M had decided to take their isoloop transport, which had been used for telemetry recording for NASA, and use it for audio.
Hmm.
And I had a project that I wanted to do, and 4 tracks was not enough for me. So I said, yes, this is Byron Wagner, and I'm at UPC, and we're considering which vendor to buy our 16 tracks.
Social engineering is another word for lying.
No. Misrepresenting. Just kind of.
Misrepresenting the facts.
Remember I said, you know, look, it's Halley's Comet? Yeah, it's kind of like yes. That. Well, look, I did not lie. I simply said we are considering which vendor's machine to use for our forthcoming album. And, you know, right now the studio doesn't have a 16 track. And we are the second largest studio in Omaha. If you would like to, this magic word, ready? Memo loan. I learned that from trade shows. If you'd like to memo loan some gear to us, I would be happy to include you in our evaluation.
Brilliant.
And they paid the freight both ways. And a 3M 16 track, it's about double the size of your radio.
Pretty big machine.
Big machine. Wow. And we used it. We hooked it up to the, you know, the 4-track console that they had, and we used it. And it was awesome.
You must have loved
it. And while I had the machine, there was a brand new radio station going on the air, KIOS, Instruction for the Omaha Schools, and they had dug out, well, not really dug out, they had converted the tile-lined former cafeteria that we had used as a Reserve Officer Training Corps ROTC drill hall when I was there, and they brought in a beautiful, you know, brand new Collins FM transmitter, and they redid the rooms, and they brought in, you know, serious pros that, you know, to build a radio station with studios.
This is the days when governments actually threw money at things and gave infrastructure to education.
Yep.
And stuff.
Yep. And they
as opposed to today where.
Yeah. So anyway, so they had this. So it was public radio, right? And I thought to myself, you guys don't have any kind of a budget for what we would now call radio imaging. Would you like some jingles? Would you like some bumpers? Now, you're going to play all kinds of stuff, right? Classical, both kinds of music, country and Western, and pop and rock and everything. So this is called ham and egging. I went to my friends who had various groups, and I said, okay, I will trade you recording studio time. If you do a jingle for KIOS, I will record a song or two of yours.
Right.
And we had classical musicians come in. We had an a cappella choir, we had rock and roll, we had country and Western, and I did this jingle package of like 10 or 12 different genres, and they put it on the air. So then I got to say to people, oh yes, I produce music, and if you want to hear what I've done, oh, just turn on KIOS. Every 15 minutes or so, you'll hear one of the things that I did for them, and so on.
Social engineering.
That's right. Yes. And then we did send the machine back, and they did eventually buy some machine from some manufacturer. But we evaluated it very carefully.
And the rest is history.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to get into how you came to California and all the amazing things you've done since then. But we're going to take a break right now. If you got a question for Byron Wagner, although you're probably totally mesmerized by his life story, we'll be right back here on VoiceOver Body Shop.
This is the Latin lover narrator from Jane the Virgin, Anthony Mendez, and you're enjoying Dan and George on The VoiceOver Body Shop.
Well, hello there. I bet you weren't expecting to hear some big-voiced announcer guy on your new orientation training for Snapchat, were you?
This is Virgin Radio.
Well, okay, we're not that innocent.
There's jeans for wearing and there's jeans for working. Dickies, because I ain't here to look pretty.
She's a champion of progressive values, a leader for California, and a voice for America.
It's smart. It's a phone. It's a smartphone. But it's so much more. It's a, the files are ready, don't forget to pick up the eggs. What time is hockey practice? Check out this song.
It's the end of the road for Rick.
It's just you and me, Rick.
When hope is lost.
The i8 from BMW. Who said saving the planet couldn't be stylish?
Hey, it's J. Michael Collins. Bet you think I'm going to try and sell you a demo now, huh? I think they speak for themselves. But I will give you my email. It's jmichael@jmcvoiceover.com. Now, if Dan will stop waxing his mustache for a minute, we'll get back to the show.
Audiobook narration. ACX, Audible, rights holders, and success as a narrator. That's what you want, right? How about a free class on how to make that happen? Even better, how about 3 free classes on how to become a successful and happy audiobook narrator? It's about to happen, and all you need to do is let us know you're interested. Go to acxmasterclass.com to jump on the alert list for the upcoming 2020 training that they're offering. Absolutely free. That's acxmasterclass.com. The first class is Friday, January 17th, and they'll continue for the next week. To be able to watch these classes, just let us know you're interested. Visit acxmasterclass.com. That's acxmasterclass.com.
As a voice talent, you have to have a website. But what a hassle getting someone to do it for you. And when they finally do, they break or don't look right on mobile devices. They're not built for marketing and SEO. They're expensive. You have limited or no control. And it takes forever to get one built and go live. So what's the best way to get you online in no time? Go to voiceactorwebsites.com. Like our name implies, voiceactorwebsites.com just does websites for voice actors. We believe in creating fast, mobile-friendly, responsive, highly functional designs that are easy to read and easy to use. You have full control. No need to hire someone every time you want to make a change. And our upfront pricing means you know exactly what your costs are ahead of time. You can get your voiceover website going for as little as $700. So if you want your voice actor website without the hassle of complexity and dealing with too many options, go to voiceactorwebsites.com, where your VO website shouldn't be a pain in the you-know-what.
This is Bill Ratner, and you're enjoying VoiceOver Body Shop with Dan Leonard and George Whittam, VOBS.TV.
And we're back with Byron Wagner right here. There he is. So we were talking about how you came out to California. Mm-hmm. You're doing jingles and all this stuff. Quickly, how did you get out
Very
here?
Very simple.
Okay, by car or?
Boy, my arm's tired. No, what happened was in those days, well, first I went to college for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And then I found out that I did not need to be in college anymore in terms of, let's just say, avoiding, supposed to evading, being sent to Vietnam, Nam. And see, I'm a voice actor. And at that point in time, if I wanted to be a recording engineer or record producer, I had multiple choices. So they were New York. It's cold and expensive, but okay.
Yeah.
LA, kind of, you know, Summer of Love stuff happening.
Right.
Because of Summer of Love, also San Francisco. There's a lot of recording going on there.
Of course.
And if I wanted to do jingles, I could go to Dallas, Pepper Tanner.
Right.
Or if I wanted to do commercials, I could go to Chicago, Kraft, and all the car companies out of Detroit would go to Chicago.
Huh.
And if I was related to somebody, I could go to Nashville or do country or Western.
Right. And so everybody's related.
Exactly. And so actually, I was working at a radio station in KRCB in Omaha, as Acton Council Bluffs, Iowa, across the river from Omaha. And I was eventually going to make it out there, but I started building a mobile unit. I got an old, from Omaha Lace Laundry via a used car company, a laundry truck. And I got plumber's lead because they didn't have mass loads.
It's kind of like a bread truck, right?
Basically,
it's just a nondescript box.
Exactly.
Just like what you and your dad did.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I took the shackles and restraints out of the back and I put in rock wool and mass load. And we used it, although we didn't use it very often to actually record from, we basically ended up using it to drive up to someone's place and then take
the cables out the back. And yeah,
right. Exactly. But so often we'd actually move the recorder inside and anyway,
record high school musicals.
And we
like
ended
that.
Up recording people who became very famous later, yeah. Hilly Michaels, Peach and Lee, anyway, in Omaha. And I rapidly discovered the reason that there were no mobile units in Omaha was because there was no market.
There's no demand.
There was no demand. I missed that part.
But you were having a hell of a time doing
it. If you build it, they won't come.
No, but the great news was it had wheels.
Yeah.
So when I was talking to a very good friend of mine, a guy that I had recorded when he'd come around to our college at OU, a guy named Steve Gillette, his wife was kind of in the background as Steve was calling me. He was saying, you should come out here. I'm sure you'd get a job right away. And I owed some people for the truck that I've been building and so on. I said, well, I'll get out there sooner or later. In the background, his wife at the time yelled, yeah, you big chicken. And I thought, okay, wait a minute. I was planning on coming to LA for the AES show, the Audio Engineering Society show anyway. I was planning on flying out. Instead, I will drive out in the mobile unit and I'll see if I can get a job. And I'll give myself a month. You guys said I could stay with you until I get a job. You have no idea how long that's going to be.
I wish I had your social engineering skills. 20 years.
I'm
ago.
Starting a course. Go to my website.
I don't need
everybody
it now,
else
thankfully.
Is. Okay.
But I'm so, okay now. So I came out to California. The AES show was over the weekend. On Monday, I made a bunch of phone calls. I got through to four studios. So I had set up four different interviews for the next day, which was a Tuesday. The first place I went to, they said, wow, this is great, but the guy you're supposed to meet with isn't here. Can you come back tomorrow? Sure. I went to the second place. They said, you're just what we need, except you're way overqualified.
I love that one.
It's like, I just want a job. Maybe we could do like barter for studio time. Mm-hmm. And the third place I got to was Ike and Tina's Bollock Sound in Englewood. Mm-hmm. And I walked in and I saw, there's a much longer series of stories about seeing the console that they had and recognizing it was
tangent.
Yeah. Anyway. And I never got to the fourth interview.
Oh.
They said, could you start right now? And I said, well, you mean like, this was a Tuesday. You mean like next month? They go, no, like now. I said, you mean like tomorrow? They go, like
sit
now.
Down right here.
Right. Now, they brought me food. They bought me underwear and socks for 2 days. I didn't leave the building for 3 days.
That's
turns
amazing.
Out they had an album commitment to United Artists that they were a little behind on. And it was one of those things
timing.
That's it. That's it. And so that was my first official gig in LA.
Wow. Outstanding.
Yeah.
So let's fast forward a little bit more here. Because
this is really long tape, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm an old guy.
So there's a lot to cover.
Yeah. I mean, we can cover it at another time.
But that's fine. Oh, wait. That's my cue.
For?
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, a special for the VOBS audience. I'm involved with a secret project, which I'm not going to reveal to you now. But you, VOBSers, if that's the correct phrase.
They've been called worse.
You get a sneak peek. If you will send an email to ByronVO.com, like voiceover, VOBS@BYRONVO.com, saying, what the hell are you talking about? I will send you an invitation to be a beta tester for an online facility that might be of interest if you do voiceover or if you are interested in voiceover.
Oh,
and I will tell you this much further. There is no upsell. Because we can't charge you any money, so there. And that's all I'm going to tell you. I'll remind you about the URL again at the end of the program in case you've forgotten. But now, George, you're saying.
I'm
you're
Dan.
George. Oh, sorry.
I'm sorry.
Dan.
Yes.
You have the halves of your brain mixed up again.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Check out this website. This is really cool, especially if you're in voiceover, which is probably why you're here. You've got a lot of patents. You've you if someone is like have computers talking to each other,
yeah,
or exchanging video or an audio and stuff like that.
Recipes are porn primarily.
Yeah. That's what it's used for now.
Oh, right.
That was not what was, I'm sure, when you were working.
Wait,
on
you
going to
get money?
Apparently, somebody's making money.
Crap. What are some of the things that you were? I mean, I'm looking at this like, wow, you did this and that. Tell them some of the things that you worked on.
It was an accident, officer. I will never do it again.
Okay.
I want to know about the ISDN thing.
Yeah. So I'll see if I can shorten this as much as possible.
We've got about 10 minutes here.
Okay. So. Well, there is a person who shall remain nameless. And when System 7 came out on Macintoshes, Disney had a whole slew of Macs, and particularly in the animation division, because there weren't any other machines.
It'd be like 92.
Because those are really the only ones you could do any animation on.
Yep. So, this person became incensed. They had an IT background, and the IT background meant that they had started off as a bean counter, for lack of a better term. And System 7 had this very interesting feature. Instead of having to go out and buy a fully loaded 286 machine and then a copy of Novell NetWare for a couple of grand to set up a file server,
yeah,
Macs would do peer-to-peer.
Is that the Bonjour thing?
No. Early. We're talking Twisted Pair, you know, Apple Talk over existing telephone
wire. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Which was great because Novell and stuff needed thick net or thin net, because this is long before 10BASE-D.
Lots of money.
And all of a sudden, the networking that existed in the Disney divisions went to crap, because to completely and overly characterize and stereotype things, women were sharing the things that women share and guys were sharing the things that guys share.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they didn't need papal blessing from the IT department to have a login on a file server. They just turned it on.
Oh.
And the network, whoop, because everybody was already, they were actually finally using it instead of just execs sending each other email with no enclosures. So they were furious, and they actually literally went to Cupertino and tried to convince the people at Apple to turn this stuff off. Because they were IT guys.
Right.
They failed. So they decided.
Clearly. Interesting timing with the story in the news lately about Mac or secure data archiving on iOS, or the ability to keep your data secure.
So anyway, so they decided they would do
keep them here as long as possible.
They decided they would do the next best thing possible, which was get rid of all their Macintoshes, which were over 1,000.
Holy cow.
There is a woman named Paula Sigmund Lowry.
They were not cheap back then.
Oh no,
not that they're cheap now, but there's a
woman named Paula Sigmund Lowry who was the head of the Disney Mac Users Group, Mickey's Mackers. And Mickey's Mackers had a pipeline to, because of Disney being a very big Macintosh customer, to Apple. And there was a woman at Apple whose job was to be liaison, her name was Nancy Merck, to four companies. And if I remember right, it was 20th Century Fox, Disney, Genentech, and Kaiser Permanente.
Okay.
And so she heard about this doom and gloom. It's like, they're going to make us get rid of all of our, save us, Obi-Wan, you're our only hope. So Nancy asked around for somebody that had experience with Macintosh and some kind of specialty at integrating technology and the arts for global companies. And so they ended up with me, and I said, could I get some free equipment? I will come and do what you need me to do, or whatever. So I went and I did some due diligence, and I'm going to skip way ahead in the story. I made the worst mistake of my entire business career by offering to do something on spec in 2 weeks and then finding out they had spent 3 years and $2 million doing the same thing. And remember the guy I was talking about? It was the IT guy.
Yeah,
it was his thing. You talk about mortal enemies. You talk about step by step slowly. I became, so while I was there, they said, you know what, never mind about this problem that we're, and I had said, you know, when I was doing my kind of tech due diligence, and I plugged my Mac portable, 40 some pounds, whatever, motorcycle battery, 40 zones lit up in the chooser. And the only place that had that many zones that I knew of outside of Apple headquarters was the Savannah River Nuclear Plant, because they had a bunch of Macintoshes.
Right.
And so I was looking down at the zone names and, you know, Team Disney, and one of them said EDL. And I said, oh, edit decision list. This is like video editing. They go, no, that's going to be your Disneyland. I said, oh, you set up like a fake zone. And they said, no, we have a half a T1 line going across the Atlantic where they're building, Euro Disneyland. EDL was Euro Disneyland.
Oh, okay.
And I said, but wait, I had just seen Blake Todd, who was the head of International for Disney Character Voices, sitting on the floor of his office with a cassette machine and a stack of DHL envelopes, taking the cassettes out, sticking them in the cassette machine, rewinding them to zero, zeroing the counter, fast-forwarding the number on the counter on the notes, listening to the audition.
Yeah, yeah.
For Beauty and the Beast, okay, the Parisian colloquial, as opposed to the Quebecois Canadian colloquial French, and then listening, remembering that for 20 seconds while he ejected that cassette, took the next cassette, rewinded it, zeroed the counter, fast-forwarded, and listened to the next sample, trying to compare the two. And I said, do you guys know you could spend $125 on a Farallon Mac recorder, and then you could like digitize the audio, and you could send it as an enclosure in your email? Because those DHL things, those are not cheap, right? They said, no, like $50 a shot. I said, and it's not like domestic where it gets to the next day. They said, no, 3 to 5 days, which means 50% chance of hitting on a weekend when customs is closed. So it's about a week. I said, okay. And I thought that was the end of the deal. But what had happened was I knew that Blake Todd was, you know, staying in 4-star hotels and flying first class and not on Disney's nickel. But for the localizers, the studios, Teletota in Paris had been given a budget of, if I remember correctly, $1 million to localize Beauty and the Beast for the French market, because they knew they'd get it all back.
Right.
So I didn't think he'd be interested in this technology that I had stumbled across that was the beginnings of digital satellite radio, which is two guys, Stephen and Michael Smith, from Belfast, Northern Ireland, who were beating their heads against the wall trying to get people to listen to this algorithm, this codec they had developed. So to jump way ahead, basically what happened was I explained what was possible, that he could actually be in real time at a session without having to fly to Paris or Tokyo or Frankfurt or Milan. And I said, but you're not interested in that, right? He says, are you kidding me? He says, you're telling me, roll into work at 9 a.m., 9 a.m. here, 6 p.m. France, do a 3-hour session in France, do a very nice lunch either at the commissary or Team Disney, 1 p.m. here, 8 a.m. Tokyo, do a session in Tokyo for 3 hours, and most importantly, do 9 holes on my favorite course before sundown, dinner with my wife and sleep in my own bed. Nudge, nudge, wait, say no more. And he said, are you fucking kidding me? Cha-ching! So there were other various interesting problems about creating the codec and making it all work and doing inverse multiplexing on Switch 56 and ISDN lines. But we did all of that.
What was it called?
The
product.
It was the original APT, Aptx.
APT, right.
It was the APT codec.
Which is still not widely, but still operational in maybe a few studios.
In Europe, a ton.
And it's
because it's the best quality, da-da-da-da.
This is competition, too.
And then that began, yes, the Telos and all of those and so on.
Yeah.
So anyway, the funny thing was I couldn't talk about it because it was all done under non-disclosure because it was a very significant thing. Yeah. And the reason that was so important to Disney was very interesting. Disney was not able to compete. Their competitors, United Artists, Universal, MGM, Warner Brothers, could go day and date, simultaneous release in multiple territories.
Yeah.
Disney couldn't do that because they couldn't use subtitles because half their audience was illiterate because they were 5 years old. They had to dub everything, which meant that it took them about 3 years to get around and do all this stuff. So the bottom line was, on the first movie that they use our system with, they came back later and they said, congratulations, you moved forward $300 million in revenue by 18 months on one movie. It was Lion King. Had it been Medicine Man or Cabin Boy, the numbers would have been smaller.
Yeah, right.
But it wasn't.
You picked the right movie to figure that out on.
And so then the thing was, we couldn't talk about it, but AT&T and at the time GTE, Pac Bell, were nuts about it because it was a really validating. They had been trying to get video conferencing off the ground with ISDN and telework. Oh, yeah.
That was like science fiction for 30 or 40 years.
Exactly. Right? But we had something that actually worked. So they said, you got to come up and talk about it. And I, to this show called Texpo. And I said, I can't because it's under NDA. And they said, well, just come up and do kind of a chalk talk. And I said, no. But I've got an idea, and this leads into a story involving Graham Nash and a public demonstration at Texpo. And then basically Bo Weaver and Don LaFontaine took 2 or 3 years to lobby the hell out of their agencies.
Yeah, they weren't, they're not easy to get people to change.
No, and the ad agencies, and all of a sudden it happened, and Don was able to get rid of his limo and was able to sit in his beautiful silk smoking jacket or whatever and use his home studio and do sessions in New York early in the morning, Chicago a little bit later, and then sessions out here. And that's how the very first ISDN codec.
And there's commercial more history. Yeah. And the rest is history.
The rest is history. And now so that's ISDN one of my patents. Is almost history.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're full cycle.
Flash forward. I know.
Questions, answers, misinformation, anybody? Nobody's.
Well, what's your favorite alternative to ISDN? I mean, you know they all exist, but
they
do you use them all?
Yes. Yeah. It's a little too early to pick a winner. There are 5 contenders.
Yeah.
Some of them are free.
Yeah.
Some of them cost money.
Yeah.
The good news is the long version of the answer, which I won't go into, is that IPv6 should have been here 10 years ago. And that
so IPv6 is a replacement for IPv4,
which is
what our current IP addresses are. You know, it's one.
IPv4 depends on the concept of the gift economy of the internet. Which is best efforts. It's kind of like printing up a whole bunch of letters, throwing them at your mailman and figuring that some percentage of them will get through.
Right.
And then building on top of that, the idea of, and if they don't get through, he'll let me know so I can resend them. So there's no guaranteed quality of service, which ISDN has, because when you make a call with ISDN, it's a circuit switched network that exists as long as you've dialed the call up.
Yeah, it's a direct, it goes through switches, but there's nobody else on that wire.
And it just works.
Yeah.
So the answer to your question that I'm avoiding is I am using all of them, and it's shaking out a little bit now, but it will be very interesting to see what continues to happen in the IP, the VOIP space,
yeah,
as opposed to ISDN.
Yeah.
Because you can't get ISDN anymore in lots of places.
Right.
It's too expensive. They don't want to support it. It's not worth it.
Yeah. Exactly. They're making it prohibitively expensive.
Intentionally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, briefly, you've built
a second choice?
Yes.
Okay.
You built a new studio here in Sherman Oaks.
I did.
You did.
I did.
I imagine it's probably almost finished. I mean, you've been working on it since I've moved out here.
That's an option?
It's been
finishing?
5 years.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
It's been at least 5 years.
Not really. This is a really high tech
Yes.
studio, and
we will do another whole season of shows.
There's one of the rooms.
That's
my room. Okay, so
Byron's personal.
And by the way, the artwork is by my daughter. We have the panels on the walls are interesting. Well, I found a company that uses the same press that they use to press wood shavings into pallets.
Shipping pallets.
And they make a rippled acoustic pattern back wooden piece of stuff that is basically a diffuser.
Yeah.
But it's a tray, so if you load the front of it with rock wool, it's a floor wax and a dessert topping.
Outstanding.
It is a diffuser and an absorber. And in fact, the coolest part is, okay, boys and girls, physics 101, angle of incidence equals angle of reflection, except you can't see me because she has the thing, but I'm having a great time. Here we go. All right, I'll show you later. But anyway. So it means that it's, here we go, angle of incidence, 0.13 degrees, angle of reflection, same thing. So it means that sound that comes in, for example, from the front, has to go out through like 3 inches instead of an inch or so of the rock wool.
It's not going anywhere.
No, it doesn't.
You get more bang for the buck out of your square footage.
Yep.
Outstanding.
Yep.
And those are huge, huge monitors. How big are those monitors?
Put them back up so I can measure them. They're actually, the monitors on the sides are 55 inches, and they're all 4K. The monitor in the front is a photogrammetrically calibratable monitor for doing still and video work as well. That's also 4K. And then there's actually, you can't really see it, but that's a little MacBook Pro sitting at the
center.
Running
all of this.
Yes. And then that's right. No, actually, the monitors are set up. We have 3 main computers besides mine. There are 2 trash can style Mac Pros and a Mac Mini. And the video outputs of any of the outputs of the 1 or 2 per CPU are switchable through an HDMI matrix to any of the monitors. And basically, there are 3 major spaces if you want to put some photos back up. There's my room, which I use for voiceover and
the art
as
is really
an office
great, by the
and
way.
So on. Yeah. That's my daughter. Thank you very much.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the most important room in the studio. This is the bathroom. Sue is laughing quietly because her mic is turned down. I'm not kidding. Go back to that shot. I need to do a feature by feature. The handle on the left is a shower. The entire room is a wet room, and that's why it's all tile, floor to ceiling and ceiling. And there's also, if you kind of can't see it, but in the middle, down about a third of the picture, is what looks suspiciously like a waterproof marine yacht-style hi-fi speaker.
It's exactly what it looks like.
There are two of those, and we have 60 watts RMS per channel into those speakers. Now, when you're not using it as an acoustic echo chamber, it's connected to an Amazon Echo Dot so that you can sit on the throne and command the playing of Toccata and Fugue in D minor, Ride of the Valkyries, you know, whatever you want, as either inspiration or camouflage.
So something like, you know, Alexa, play Benny Goodman.
Works great. Works great. And it's also an echo chamber. Okay. Oh. Now we've done it. Is it Alexa or Echo that you have to command?
It's Alexa.
Alexa, stop. For God's sake, please, I'm begging you.
I was yelling at mine. Is it me or are they getting harder of hearing? I was yelling at mine this morning. Like literally yelling.
Officer, I've never seen that man before in my life.
Yes.
That was a visit.
So that bathroom is amazing.
Yes, go ahead and bring up. There are some pictures, some other pictures that people might want to see more of a studio. They're under, you'll find them. That's not it, but that's okay.
That's historical.
That's a picture of me without facial hair to speak of. It takes me a very long time to grow it. And that's editing outside of my booth in my old place, which was literally a one-bedroom apartment. Okay, that's the library.
That's the video studio.
All right, I thought, well, if I'm doing a recording studio, it should be like a little insert stage so I can do vlogging. Is that how it's pronounced? Vlogging?
Yes.
I thought you were clearing your throat.
Yeah.
Okay, vlogging. And, you know, a little bit of post stuff or maybe ADR or maybe, you know, dubbing or things like that. So the one thing that occurred to me, having spent a long time in studios, was you have to step over or trip over microphone cables and earphone cables and power cables and guitar cables and amplifier cables because they're on the floor. I thought, well, I'm putting in a lighting grid. Why don't I? And if you look up at the right-hand corner of the picture, highlighted by a conveniently placed light, you will see grip clamps on the base of microphone stands. So my microphone stands hang from the ceiling. And you will also notice a plethora of cabling and stuff on the ceiling. So you got a guitar cable that goes to a direct box. You got a microphone. You want to plug it in. You need power for something. I was able to, a lot of this is kind of sourced from surplus or secondhand places. We counted, and we have 532 AC outlets within the studio proper, which is only 400 square feet. And we have UPSs hooked into them permanently because I thought, well, you know, you want to let some. So that was the live room, and there's also seamless paper on electric letdowns and so on. And if you keep looking, you might find another picture that is of the control room, as we call it. Although the point of building the studio the way that I wanted, with George's help, whether he's willing to admit it or not, that's the control room. So again, you know, 55-inch 4K monitors, and you'll see RX7 up on one screen, and up on the left, you'll see a bunch of the outputs of the cameras in the different rooms. Each of the rooms is acoustically isolated from each other and the outside equally.
I see Corey.
You probably do. Corey? Ibe? Something like that?
Corey Ibe.
Yes.
He did a lot of the handwork.
He did, yes. Yes, he did. We had a lot of great help. And anyway, so the concept is that could be the mixdown room, or it could be an ISO booth. It could be voiceover. It could be, I could, you know, from the live room, if I bring in a folding table, I have a fader port. So I plug that in, I lower the Genelex down to ear level, and it's a mixing suite. Oh, no, it's not. It's a classroom.
Only here in California, folks. Byron, it's a pleasure to have you on our show.
Likewise.
You know,
it's not George, it's Dan.
That's right.
I wanted to correct you.
Thank you.
And I think you're allowed to stay longer if you want.
Yeah.
I will be happy to stay.
Okay, well, stick around for Tech Talk, which is coming up next. But we're going to take a break right now. We're going to have to do a show from your studio.
We're going to.
Yeah, yeah,
we're going to do that probably in the next couple of months. And then you can get a real tour of this place.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
It is amazing. All right. We'll be right back and wrap this up and then get ready for Tech Talk right after this.
Yeah, hi, this is Carlos Alazraki, the voice of Rocco, and you're watching VoiceOver Body Shop.
Your dynamic voiceover career requires extra resources to keep moving ahead. Now there's one place where you can explore everything the voiceover industry has to offer. That place is voiceoverextra.com. Whether you're just exploring a voiceover career or a seasoned veteran ready to reach that next professional level, stay in touch with market trends, coaching, products and services, while avoiding scams and other pitfalls. VoiceOver Extra has hundreds of articles, free resources, and training that will save you time and help you succeed. Learn from the most respected talents, coaches, and industry insiders when you join the online sessions, bringing you the most current information on topics like audiobooks, auditioning, casting, home studio setup and equipment, marketing, performance techniques, and much more. It's time to hit your one-stop daily resource for voiceover success. Sign up for a free subscription to newsletters and reports and get 14 bonus reports on how to ace the voiceover audition. It's all here at voiceoverextra.com. That's voiceoverxtra.com.
Hey, it's time to talk about voiceoveressentials.com. And unlike Congress, VoiceOver Essentials keeps their word, and their amazingly successful January 2020 sale on their voice-optimized headphones positively ends at midnight, January 31st, Central Standard Time. Only on voiceoveressentials.com, though. Free shipping in the continental U.S. By the way, for current users of version 1 and 2, VoiceOver Essentials now has replacement leather ear pads available and the replacement audio cords for version 2. That's over at voiceoveressentials.com. Go over to voiceoveressentials.com and get your Harlan Hogan voice-optimized headphones right now for $20 off.
Hey, everybody, it's time to talk about Source Elements. You know who they are, the creators of Source Connect, that tool that you don't have. What? You don't have it? You should have it. It's that tool that allows you to connect your studio to other studios around the world so they can record you from your booth. It's a tool you should have because even if you're not being asked for it now, you might be asked for it tomorrow or in a month or in a year. You want to have it ready to go and know how to use it. It's really the heir apparent to ISDN technology, and it is definitely what the pros are using. You can go ahead and sign up for a 15-day free trial of Source Connect over at sourceelements.com. Get it up and running. Get your iLock account in order. There's a little video on there. I'll teach you how to do it by yours truly, and it'll help you get up and running so you can understand how it all works. Then that day that you get the gig, you can activate the license. It's a no-brainer. Give it a try. Thanks for your support, Source Elements, and we'll see you right after this break.
Ooh, I think I heard the voice of a body shop. I did hear the voice of a body shop. Big old body shop.
All right. Well, Byron certainly did have a lot to say, and we have just a little time to say goodbye.
All right. Well, we'll take that and use it wisely.
Okay. Like next week on this very show, we'll have Tech Talk number 26.
Which we're taping right after this.
Right after this. So if you got questions, ask them right
now.
Still
got time.
Absolutely. Who are our donors of the week?
Oh, looks like we got some familiar names. Michelle Blenker, Sarah Borges, Philip Sapir, Trey Mosley, Shelley Avellino, Brian Page, Patty Gibbons, and Diana Birdsall. I've almost memorized those names. Why? Because they subscribe and they send us money on a regular basis, monthly. There's a little PayPal thing, and you can do a subscription, or if there's something particularly helpful, you can just do a one-shot little.
Right. But in our homepage, just click on the Donate Now button and set that up.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody that does that.
Right. Join our mailing list, too, because you'll find out what's going on in the show. And you could have your booth on the show. This is Johnny George's brand new booth. Isn't this cool?
It's pretty awesome, I have to say.
And it looks like we're actually in it, which is making him happier than anything you could possibly think of. if you'd like to be in the audience, email us at theguys@vobs.tv. And if you want to send us your booth, that's the other place to send it to. But make sure you send it to us in
landscape,
not
this
portrait.
Way.
All righty. We need to thank our sponsors.
Yes, we do.
Mike?
Harlan Hogan's VoiceOver Essentials.
VoiceOver Extra.
Source Elements.
VoiceOverHeroes.com.
VoiceActorWebsites.com.
And J. Michael Collins Demos. And, of course, the Dan and Marcy Leonard Foundation for the Betterment of Live and Recorded Webcasting. And podcasting, I guess. We've got to add that on there.
it's all under that umbrella.
Yes. Our technical director is the amazing Sue Merlino, who just followed along with us tonight like you wouldn't believe. And, of course, Lee Pinney for being Lee Pinney.
Thanks, Lee.
Yeah, we really appreciate
being you.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, we'll be setting up now for Tech Talk. Don't go away. Ask your questions. And that's going to do it for us this week. I'm Dan Leonard.
And I'm George Whittam.
And this is VoiceOver.
Body Shop.
Or VO. BS. See you next time, guys.
Bye.